to the N. Ray Belcher.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Don Sampson. I'm representing myself as trustee in bankruptcy. This case, the issue in this case is whether a co-debtor on the family home that doesn't have any title to the property is entitled to a homestead exemption in the property. This is a case that homestead is a state law, comes under state law. Generally, you'll see these cases come up in the bankruptcy context where somebody's filed bankruptcy and they're asking for the exemption in the bankruptcy court. The district court, in this case, I submit, is bound by the state law and the state's determination for a homestead exemption. The district court, in its opinion, basically went out and read the state statute and made its own interpretation. If you note, in its opinion, it didn't make any reference to any of the state law or any of the cases that were decided by the state court in it.
Are those cases unanimous in their view of how this is interpreted?
Yes, sir. Well, with one exception, an 1800s case of Riddleman that had been discredited by a number of opinions, but every case, there were four, I believe, that I cited in there that were all unanimous that said you've got to have some title of some type in order to have the homestead exemption.
The Illinois Supreme Court, though, has not ruled on this, have they?
The Illinois Supreme Court, I believe two of the cases, Rice and DeMartini, each went to the Supreme Court on it, and each in their ruling said some title of some type in order to claim the homestead exemption.
But DeMartini is from 1943. That's the latest word from the Illinois Supreme Court, as I think I read the case law, and there have been developments in property law in Illinois since that last pronouncement of the state's highest court. Isn't that right?
That's true. I believe that the Rice case also went to the Supreme Court, which I think was subsequent to that, which again said you have to have some title.
Do we have anything from the state Supreme Court after the marital property law? I can't remember the name of the statute, but the state statute.
No, I think all the Supreme Court and the state court cases were older cases.
Before the adoption of the...
Right. I don't find anything real recent from them.
My reason for asking that is, do you think this is a case that would be appropriate to try to certify to the Illinois Supreme Court?
Your Honor, I think there is some, and if I could skip ahead to a part of my argument, some indication from the state legislature, which is mentioned in some of the bankruptcy court cases, and the district court case, the only other district court case, Papa, on this issue, where the legislature spoken to this. There was some confusion about the possibility of, at the time, $7,500 homestead exemption if you have multiple owners of the real estate, more than two. And they said when they amended the statute in 94 that the cap on the homestead was 75 divided by the number of owners of the real estate. Both Hartman, Papa, other cases decided by the bankruptcy courts all said the state court, the legislature spoken and used owner of the property when they did the amendment in 94, and I think that speaks to what Illinois says about this.
But that amendment doesn't speak to the situation that we have here where you have one spouse with the ownership interest, the sole ownership interest, and the other with the possessory interest. And whether that possessory interest qualifies for the homestead exemption is the question.
It's not directly on point.
You know, whether that sort of an interest falls in the rightly possessed by lease or otherwise language in the homestead exemption statute. And that legislative history that you just cited, or statutory history, because it really appeared as an amendment to the statute, doesn't speak to that question.
It doesn't. They didn't specifically amend that and speak directly to this case, but I think it shows what Illinois is thinking on this, and the bankruptcy courts have certainly used that.
Well, a leasehold isn't an ownership interest, though, is it?
It's some title. And the gist of the argument, I think the key to the whole thing is you've got a debtor that wants to exempt the property. To exempt it, and this is Morris, which is Judge Myers in our court. Morris was spoken of, I guess, by Judge Altenberger, who decided this court. And one peculiar thing in Judge Altenberger, he'd ruled on the exact same thing 10 years earlier in a detailed opinion in Hartman, where he ruled and discussed the two cases that talked about the homestead, alienating the homestead, the husband and a wife, and the marital property laws, and discredited both of those cases, saying basically these two acts are acts that determine the property rights vis-a-vis the two partners, but they don't affect the third-party creditors at all. Those cases have all been followed by the different bankruptcy courts. Those two cases were both decided by the same bankruptcy judge. But Judge Altenberger, in his case, basically reversed himself after giving a very detailed opinion in Hartman that was followed by a number of other bankruptcy courts and followed by the only other district court that spoke on the subject. And in his opinion, basically said, well, there's some authority on one side, there's some authority on the other side, and I'm just going to make a clear-cut rule here so there's no dispute any longer. That was basically his reasoning on the thing. The problem was, too, the authority that was for the way he decided in our case was all authority that existed before he decided Hartman. So he's taking cases that he'd already considered and discredited and saying, well, they're on the other side, but now I'm going to switch myself and follow them. He also said that Silverman, which was Judge Fine's case, that held that because you were on the mortgage, that gave you enough of an interest in the real estate to claim the exemption. He said that case was subsequent to Hartman, when actually it was an 88 case and preceded it. So that in his initial opinion in the bankruptcy court, there were two. There was that major error. He also, in his opinion, said that Morris, which was Judge Meyer's case, supported the way he was ruling, when Morris was one where the people had some type of title. They owned the property in a corporation. Judge Myers said that the corporation was dissolved and they were actually co-tenant. They had some legal interest in it because of that that could be executed on. I think that's the gist of it. You've got to have an interest that can be executed on. Mr. Belcher had no interest that could be executed on. If he alone filed bankruptcy, no creditor could get to the real estate. And that, I think that's the gist of it.
What's your sense of the national rule to the extent there is one? I recognize that the homestead exemption is the creature of state statute,
mm-hmm.
But most states have these. And so I assume that bankruptcy courts in other parts of the country have confronted this, or is that not the case?
There's some, but it's and I really didn't look at other states because it is a state law matter. I think you'll probably find them all over the board on it. Some states you only get one homestead no matter how many people you've got. But I think in this state it's clear you've got to have some type of title in order to have the homestead. I think I'm on my rebuttal time.
Thank you, counsel.
Ms. Wood.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I do represent the debtors in the bankruptcy, Catherine and Keith Belcher. At the time in 2005 when this case was filed, they were married. They are divorced now in 2007 for the second time. If I may address some of the arguments that Mr. Sampson was making, and, Your Honor, you had asked whether other courts across the country have looked at this question, and they have. But, of course, the problem is that every exemption statute is different. If you look at Indiana's exemption statute, quite frankly, it talks a lot about co-tenancy or joint tenancy. It talks about a lot about tenancy in the entirety because that seems to have been the development in Indiana law, that the problem was how do you execute on a tenancy in the entirety. So the Indiana statute actually goes into that in great detail but doesn't talk about ownership interest. No homestead exemption statute that I looked at actually stated that you have to be on the title. The Illinois Homestead Exemption Statute does not require, it doesn't say title anywhere. It says, as you are well aware, it says ownership or otherwise, leasehold or otherwise. And I think the Illinois legislature was trying to create a catch-all.
How would you describe Mr. Belcher's interest in that property as of the time of the bankruptcy?
An interesting question, Your Honor, because the court did not have a hearing as to facts. There weren't any facts that were really brought out. So the only facts are really what my client is sworn to. Essentially, when he remarried Catherine, they were living in the house together, which is obviously one of the requirements. He was bringing marital income into the home, and the home did appreciate in value from the time they were married to the time that the house was sold after the bankruptcy was filed. So there was an appreciation in value, which, as you're aware, under the Illinois Marriage and Dissolution of Marriage Act, Section 503, if there's an appreciation in value or contribution, those are both marital property, regardless of whose name is on title. And
of course, go ahead.
Well, that's an inchoate marital property interest that ripens only upon divorce or death.
You would think so, Your Honor, except for that it doesn't say vesting in the Illinois Marriage and Dissolution of Marriage Act. And there's some case law out there that talks about, well, and actually Section 541 of the Bankruptcy Code actually says legal or equitable interest. And Section 541, it talks about obviously property of the estate. It does not say that it has to be a vested interest in property in order to become property of the estate. So in other words, in Section 541, it actually says legal or equitable interest.
But the question here is not whether this is property of the estate. Clearly it is, because it was a joint bankruptcy of husband and wife, and it was titled in the wife's name. So that's not the question that we have in this case. The question we have is straight-up interpretation of the Illinois homestead exemption statute, and the question that begs is, what sort of an interest is this? Is this a property interest that's included within that exemption on that otherwise language?
Right. Well,
who knows what that means?
Well, that's exactly true. Who does know what it means? It's not defined in the statute. Excuse me, none of the case law in Illinois actually talks about that otherwise.
Well, all those old Illinois cases, including some from the state Supreme Court, require title.
Well,
the question is whether those are still valid.
Those are the ones, Your Honor, the ones that are cited in the trustee's brief actually don't follow this pattern and are not obviously in the context of a bankruptcy. If I can address some of the case law that the trustee actually did talk about, the First National Bank versus Sandifer, it actually talked about whether or not the wife was a householder, which, of course, at the time the exemption statute talked about a householder, and only one householder was allowed to have the exemption statute. So the Sandifer case really circled around who's the householder in this case. It didn't talk about whether she was on title. It didn't. And in fact, one of the other cases, the Sandifer case, actually, the wife was on title. It was a home that she purchased prior to the marriage. Her name was on the title, but the court determined that because she and her husband got married, the husband then died during the course of the bankruptcy, I believe, and they determined she wasn't a householder because she had no dependents. So they never came to the question of whether or not title was required. She was on the title, and they still denied her the homestead exemption because she wasn't the householder. Of course, the statute has changed at this point, and that's an unfortunate case for that poor woman, because at this point, the way the homestead statute reads, she would obviously have the homestead exemption because two people are required. And as regards the 1994 amendment, which the trustee talked about and was brought up in the court, the homestead exemption was modified in 1994 because if you look at the legislative history, the legislature was concerned because there were courts interpreting that you could stack as many homestead exemptions as you wanted to, at $7,500 for every person who could claim a homestead exemption. And it didn't require, there were cases out there that didn't require title.
Let me ask you this hypothetical. If Ms. Belcher had brought in her sister instead of her ex-husband and remarried him, and her sister contributed to the upkeep and so forth, would her sister have had a homestead exemption?
I can think of no other ancillary Illinois law offhand that would have allowed the sister to do so, but the homestead exemption statute by itself in the Code of Civil Procedure, yes. My argument is really that the husband acquired an interest in the home under the acts that I've talked about, which is the IMDMA, the Dissolution of Marriage Act, and the Probate Act as well. You're catching me off guard a little bit, Your Honor. I can't think of any statute offhand where the sister would have gotten an interest.
I'm just trying to get to the nature of what this other or otherwise interest
and
is.
And I would argue, yes, that under the or otherwise, then she would have. And there isn't any law, there's no case law out there that talks about it. Unfortunately, Your Honor, you had mentioned whether this should be certified to the Illinois Supreme Court.
I'll ask you that.
Excuse me, let me preempt you there. I'm not sure. Yes, it would be great if they had spoken to this issue, and it'd be great if they would speak to this issue. And so I guess I would leave it at that. But unfortunately, there's existing case law in the northern and the southern districts of Illinois, and the question is, how do you resolve that? I think that probably everyone on this panel would agree that it'd be great if the Supreme Court had actually spoken to the issue. I'm not sure if the Supreme Court's going to want to, though, because if you interpret that or otherwise, it creates another schism in law that reaches into the Dissolution of Marriage Act, the Probate Act, and a lot of other places. I personally think that the legislature deliberately left it vague so that there would be all these other possibilities out there. And if you look again at the legislative history in the 1994 amendment, it's actually one of the legislators from my own district, Mr. Hoffman, who participated in that. And at no point was the or otherwise talked about, and at no point was the word owner actually discussed when they were trying to take away the ability to stack. I don't think they really thought about when they put the owner language in there what they were doing, because, of course, Mr. Sampson would argue that you have to have an ownership interest, whatever that may be, but that takes away the or otherwise part of the statute. And I think Judge Altenberger, in his reversing himself just to complicate everything, I think what he looked at was that and I have no idea what he looked at, but quite frankly, he left it up open, he reversed himself, and then Judge Murphy, when he looked at it in the district court, really just said, somebody's got a rule on this, so I'm going to pass it on and let you folks take care of it. So if you folks in your infinite wisdom believe
pass
that...
It on, that's somebody else.
Right. And if this panel chooses to do that with the Supreme, the Illinois Supreme Court, so be it.
The Supreme Court can always tell us that they don't want to take it, so...
This is true, and quite frankly, I suspect, Your Honor, if and when this court or any court rules on the issue, you may see the legislature make some changes, but I don't know what changes could actually be made in the respect that if you take away the or otherwise, or if you say it specifically it has to be on title, well, and I could point to the Carver case, which was actually decided in the Southern District, and again, in my brief, I say wrongly. Mr. Sampson and I argued that same case. It was a case where the husband was the only debtor. His wife was not a debtor, and she was not on title, and Judge Myers found that she had no interest. Interestingly, the title at the time actually had his ex-wife's name on it. So if we go specifically on title, then the ex-wife would have a home, would be able to claim some interest, but... Exactly,
but
she didn't.
Not all three going to be living together.
Not that I know of. You're right. And he's since jumped off the bridge in Alton, so we don't need to talk about him anymore. But ultimately, you're right. See, there would be the problem isn't that she doesn't have residence, but the divorce court had actually conveyed her interest, but her name had remained on title. So I don't think it just requires title. There is other Illinois law, including the Marriott case, which I cited, which I believe is a Second District case. It is a trust case, but it also talks about five different ways. Or five different things that you have to consider in determining whether or not an interest exists under the Dissolution of Marriage Act, and only one of the five items has to do with title. So I think other courts in the state of Illinois are saying that you need that title may be one issue, but that's not the determining factor and it's not the only factor. So what I would ask this court to affirm the lower court's rulings, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Wood. Mr. Sampson?
Your Honor, just a couple of points. Now, I apparently don't have the local knowledge on the passing of that amendment that Ms. Woods does, but the statute, I think, that Judge Murphy interpreted, there are three parts. One is an interest in the property. That's been defined by the courts as an estate, which is something that requires some type of title. I think the own or right rightly possessed by lease or otherwise. I think there's a number of cases that say what the otherwise means, that there's got to be the dissolved corporation Morris. There's some type of title they can get to, a life estate, a contract purchaser, all of them. There's some type of title that you can get to that you can execute on. It's an asset of that debtor that can be executed on. The final part of the statute, read as an entirety, says the homestead and all right in and title to are exempt from execution. I think that says you've got to have something, and I think this is, again, the key to the whole homestead exemption. You've got to have something that can be executed on.
But in that, that conflicts with the inclusion of a leasehold.
You can execute on a leasehold. If I've got, if I'm leasing a condo for $100 a month, and the lease is worth $10,000 a month, you can go ahead and execute on it as trustee. I sold a leasehold back just recently on it. It's the only one I've ever done, but you can execute on a leasehold. And I think that's the gist of it. That's the nuts and bolts. Otherwise, Mr. Belcher files a bankruptcy. He doesn't have any kind of title interest in it. That house is not property in Mr. Belcher's bankruptcy estate. No matter how much equity is in that house as trustee, I could have never sold it.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel for an interesting presentation.